On Saturday, December 14th, 2013, the South Carolina Historic Aviation Foundation held its monthly open house at Hamilton Owens Airport. This was a special open house. Our special guest, Colonel Dan Rossman and his wife, Sylvia. Now, Rossman was the left seat student pilot of GF-2, the foundation's B-25C, on June 6, 1944, when it was forced to ditch in Lake Greenwood. Now, during the open house, Rossman talked with the audience about how GF-2 ended the day beneath the waters of Lake Greenwood and his later experiences as a pilot.
It was a mistake. Thank you.
Oh, no. Please, if you would like, and folks, you can ask questions. Could you tell us a little about that day?
A little. How do I wind up in the left seat of GF-2? My mother loved to tell the story. I was 2 years old, and she had me out in the backyard. She was hanging clothes to dry, and it took two clothespins, put them together, and didn't. And from that point on, I knew I was going to fly someday. And Pearl Harbor was December 7, 41, and I was 19 on September 29th. Can't hear me? I usually don't have that trouble. I'm usually told to shut up. I was 19 years old on September 29th in 42, and the Air Force lowered the aviation cadet age to 19, and I was on my way. To get to be a pilot in the Air Force in World War II, you went through, after a lot of ground school, you went through three flying schools, primary, basic, and advanced. And Ron Shelton last night asked me where I was about 70 years ago. About 70 years ago, I was right in the middle of basic training in BT-13s, the second school. BT-13 called the Volte Valiant. We called them the Volte Vibrators because it took you a while to stop shaking after you've been flying them for a bit. Sat down with the instructor who said, assuming you're lucky enough to finish this program, what would you like to fly? No question. P-38s. Great. Then you want to go to twin-engine advanced flying school, not single. Great. Sign the form. Says, I request a twin-engine advanced flying school. About 3 or 4 weeks before completion of twin-engine advanced, sit down with the instructor who says, you've got to make a choice on what you're going to fly. And I said, that's easy. P-38s. He says, no. Out of twin-engine advanced, you fly B-17s, B-24s, No way. I came to fly P-38s. Can't do it. You've got to request. So for the first time in my Army career, I defied a direct order, and I wrote down P-38s or A-20s or P-38s was all I would take. And sure enough, on graduation, got orders say, go to Columbia for REPL replacement depot, and then wait to go to Charlotte for A-20s. About 3 weeks in to stay at Columbia, I got called in and told, your orders are changed, you're going to fly 25s at Greenville. I erupted. The lieutenant that I was talking to told me to calm down and shut up, that in 25s I'd be going to the Pacific or China flying low level. So I was terrified at the prospect of flying B-17s or B-24s. We have a B-24 pilot, I understand, someplace in the group. There you are. I salute you. You've got more guts than I had. So at any rate, May 21st, 44, I arrived at Greenville, started flying B-25s. My mom was facing surgery. She decided to come visit me and arrived on June the 5th to stay for one day. June the 6th, I took her to the railroad station, put her on, went out to the base. The airplane was getting ready to go, and I was a little late getting there. I said, why don't you guys, that's Lieutenant Jackson, who was the instructor, and Blackie Wallace, who was the other student, get in. I'll do the walk around. So I did the walk around on the airplane. Blackie got into the left seat, and for the next 2.5 hours, we did the drill, one engine after another, flap emergency, landing gear emergency. Then we switched seats. I got in the left seat. Major mistake, it turned out. And anyway, we worked for about 2 hours, at which point both I and the instructor were kind of sweaty and tired, and he said, here, let me have it. I'll show you what it's going to be like in combat. And so we went off and had a tour of the area. And wound up coming down Lake Greenwood. Now, all we were doing was having a low tour. Nobody was looking for a sub. Well, I can't imagine how any rational person would really think there was a sub in it, but it's one of the rumors I heard. Had nothing to do with bathing beauties, although I understand. I found out later we actually did overfly two young ladies who were sitting on an island. I never saw them. If my eyes had been open, I might have seen them. Unfortunately, I was flying at the point, and what happened now was very quick. Peripherally, I saw a guy standing off in a rowboat fishing. And I thought, my God, we're eye to eye. If we're eye to eye, I'm too low. At which point, instructor said, you're too low, you're too high. Popped a stick, and the props went in the water. Vibration got pretty bad. He said, I've got it, and ditched it. Just pulled back on the stick, tail slapped, we went nose in. I came out of the seat. When I woke up, I was underwater, and somebody had just stepped on my head. Getting out of the airplane. I did pull, when he said I've got it, I pulled the escape hatch so we could get out the top of the airplane. It took about a half hour before somebody came out in a motorboat to pick us up. And we wound up in the Greenwood Hospital for a bit, at which point I looked in the mirror and could see my teeth. The right side of my jaw was hanging down a bit. From there, it went downhill. There was a court-martial about 10 days later at Charlotte. The instructor lost his wings and his commission was re-enlisted as a corporal. I was fined $75 for conduct unbecoming an officer, failure to prevent destruction of government property, willful destruction of government property. Buzzing, which was a term for low-level unauthorized flying, was a major problem for the Air Force. From the day I got in, the Air Force went to a lot of trouble to make it very clear that it was frowned on very severely. I think the only thing that saved me was the fact that somebody intervened and said, we've just spent $500,000, which is a lot of money in 44, produce a pilot who has not yet been to combat. So, you know, do whatever you want with him, but let him go. So my career continued. I went on to fly 25s in the Pacific for a year and then stayed in the reserves afterwards and retired with 29 years total service. One last thing.
Where were you in Pacific combat?
What?
Where were you in the Pacific?
Oh, boy. Started in New Guinea, up through the Philippines, and then Oki. Without the A-bomb, I wouldn't be standing here today.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We've been just about gotten to Oki, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks.
How long did it float after you hit the water?
8 minutes. I timed it. For some reason, I timed it. It rolled over and there was a Bombay tank in it, which popped out.
The plane rolled
down.
Over?
Yeah, it just rolled kind of on its side and went down. The instructor and the flight engineer took off for the West Coast. The instructor swam over to me and said, keep an eye on Wallace. He's hurt pretty bad. Turned out afterwards he went over to Wallace and said, keep an eye on Rossman. He's hurt pretty bad. So the two of us were out there while they swam to the shore. To try and go get help. I don't know where. I didn't see them again until the following day.
Did they send you to school after that to practice landing in the water?
About 10 days later, I went to ditching school.
As an instructor?
Yeah.
You had to keep your mouth shut, though, didn't you?
Yeah. I kept my mouth shut.
Well, you had an injury.
One of the few times in life.
You had an injury, though, didn't it hit you on the head or something?
It took 24 stitches to close close my jaw. The medical OD officer of the day that night was a guy that had been a psychiatrist. He was happy as a bug in a rug. He hadn't stitched anybody for 20 years.
You still have the scar?
Yeah. Yeah, among others, yeah. Yeah, the age lines are there.
Well, Dan, what was the day on which this accident took place?
D-Day. Yeah, while we were flying, Blackie Wallace kept saying, there's something going on in Europe, some kind of an invasion. They're calling it D-Day. Oh, great. Since it was D-Day, you'll find nothing in any local newspaper about the incident.
Yeah.
D-Day just wiped everything else out.
Thank goodness they didn't report it, right?
Yeah.
Dan, how did Coca-Cola save your life?
Oh, my God. Yeah. When we went over, after we finished at Greenville, they sent us to Hunter at Savannah, which is called an airport of embarkation, where we were completely equipped with all the equipment we would need, sunglasses. The only Air Force base I've ever been at where supply had everything you needed, and then gave us a brand new B-25 and said, take it to Hamilton Field, California. So we took it to Hamilton, parked it. It went to Hamilton Field to get the carburetors changed to what they call long-range carburetors, because it's not really, the Pacific is not really a two-engine ocean. It's really a four-engine ocean, and the normal carburetors just wouldn't do the job. And weather front of historic proportions had set in, hung down from Dutch Harbor, was keeping airplanes going. We were stuck in Sacramento for a few weeks. And then finally the word came one. What happened was every morning at 8 o'clock I'd call in and they'd say, not today. And then one morning I called in and they said, the bus will be in front of the hotel at 10 o'clock. And we spent all day in briefings. All we knew was we were flying to Hawaii. Well, it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out where we were going to wind up after we went to Hawaii. The day, as I say, finally came. We took off at 1 o'clock in the morning. Just because of the way the airplanes were placed, we were number one. The first landmark as such was the bridge. And the word was, there are bridge flyers in the group. You will not do it. If you do it, you will be court-martialed when you get to Hawaii. Then there were the Farallon Islands, 26 miles off. After that, there were three weather ships. Well, now the weather was fiercely. We were never able to contact a weather ship. Couldn't make contact from up front. Radio man could not make contact, so we just kept going. About 8 o'clock, the guy's always been a hero in my life, the navigator, Dick Shave, came up and said, I got to tell you, I haven't got the least idea where we are. Great. He said, it'll be about 2 hours before the sun gets high enough so I can take some sun lines. And I said, that's going to work out just great. We got about 2 hours worth of fuel left. So, well, keep going. So I decided, well, let me go to the radio compass loop to pick, see if I can pick up something. And I just started filling on. Pretty soon I heard da-da-da-da-dee, da-dum, which I recognized as Morton Downey's theme song for a Coca-Cola program. Morton Downey, Irish singer, for anybody that's not familiar with it. So I went to compass position on the radio, and it went around and went about 45 degrees that way. 45 degrees that way, and took off, and sure enough, the signal started getting stronger, and then came on with identifier, we were headed for Honolulu. We'd have gone southwest of Hawaii. Nobody would have looked for us out in that direction. Got there, called in, and it said, requesting a straight in, and they said, can't do a straight in, go straight in, have a Goonie bird on the runway. I said, no, hold the Goonie, the tower operator and I talked to each other for a couple of times. I said, forget it, and we came in. Later on, a couple hours later, the flight engineer came by and said, I thought I would tell you, they dipsticked the tanks. We had about 50 gallons left. I didn't ask him how much of that was usable. That's, well, to this day, then, I drink Coca-Cola.
The plane holds how much fuel?
Well, we had the internal 964 and 1,500 other gallons. We were supposed to be in the air just over 10 hours. We were in the air 13 hours and 5 minutes.
Wow.
We were very good at leaning the mixture. After that, I say again, it went downhill.
Do you still drive a car from time to time?
Yeah, just not on the highways.
You know where you're going then?
No, I turned the compass.
Yeah, the Coca-Cola commercial.
Coca-Cola.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you. It was an honor, and I want to say it was an honor and a privilege to serve.
Thank you.
Yeah.
go ahead.
I want to say a quick thing. First of all, Dan and his lovely wife Sylvia and I flew together yesterday in a 172 from Georgia to Columbia. And Sylvia, thank you so much for coming and being a part of today. And we salute you as well. So I want to keep going. And I want to say a quick story. Dan went on to be a career pilot, but how long has it been since you last flew other than yesterday?
About 40 years.
About 40 years. So we get in the airplane, we take off at PDK, we're on an instrument plan, and we get to Athens, and I look over to Dan and I say, Dan, would you like to fly? If you want to, feel free. And he goes, oh, no, I won't do that. Yeah, okay, I will. And so he flies the whole way and has not, I mean, no autopilot in my plane. He pegged the altitude, pegged the airspeed. Just had no problems following course, and it appeared that every instrument in my plane was somewhat foreign to him. All the ones that actually were digital, GPS, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, just couldn't imagine what. I was just so impressed at how well he was flying a plane that he just stepped into, sitting in the right seat. And then we got near Lake Greenwood, and I pointed it out to him, and he said, hey, can we go over there? I said, nope. Then we were getting directed to the Columbia VOR, and Dan said, well, before you do that, can I just, like, do some turns and stuff like that? And I said, sure. So we canceled our IFR flight plan, and I said, we were right near Lake Murray also. I said, why don't you take it down to 1,500 feet? Let's just fly over Lake Murray over to the dam. And, of course, he went right down to 1,500 feet. We were flying low and slow over Lake Murray, and I was thinking, that may be a bad idea. but we had no problem. So he was a true professional. We thank you so much for coming on this way.